The image is haunting. A woman perched on a fifth-story window ledge, an ambulance waiting below. In her mind, the red lights transform into leopard eyes from recurring dreams. She believes she will become wind, bone, blood, and memory. This is how Mira Bartok introduces us to her mother, Norma, whose schizophrenia dominated both their lives. By age 5, Bartok already carried a terrible secret. Playing Helen Keller with her eyes shut tight, she heard strange laughter and discovered her mother stumbling around in underwear, wielding a knife, spinning wildly, shouting obscenities. In that moment, her beautiful mother merged with Medusa, forever spinning while I watched with my one good eye. Norma received multiple diagnoses: catatonic, dissociative, manic depressive, paranoid schizophrenic. During brief periods of wellness, she'd work as a temp secretary or take Mira and her sister Rachel to museums. After hospitalizations, she would return moving like a drifting boat, claiming Nazis had set her brain on fire with machines. What makes this narrative so compelling is how it captures a child's perspective, the confusion, fear, and desperate attempts to find normalcy amid chaos. Sometimes I imagined it growing into my mother, Bartok writes about a houseplant, filling her lungs with leaves, wrapping around her bones. Gardens became Bartok's childhood sanctuary. While her mother napped, she escaped to her grandparents' yard, pretending to be a bee among honeysuckle and plums. Outside, I heard singing, arias, trembling leaves, mourning doves, drowning out background noise of war, riots, and my mother's despair. Nature offered beauty and constancy amid chaos. Music wove another vital thread. Despite her illness, Norma was a gifted pianist whose playing revealed her inner world. She attacked Beethoven with fierce intensity, while Bach flowed from her hands with mathematical precision. In lucid moments, she became a gentle teacher, guiding Bartok through basic scales. My mother's white hands fluttered over mine like birds waiting for mistakes, Bartok recalls, ashes from her cigarettes falling onto the keys and my fingers. These intimate moments could shatter instantly, her mother sometimes leaping up mid-lesson, fleeing outside as her grandfather's harsh cry of "crazy bitch" followed her into the street. When Bartok's sister left for Northwestern University, she remained alone with her increasingly unstable mother. Her grandmother's stark declaration, "She's your responsibility now," sealed her fate. One night, attempting to go out with a friend, Bartok confronted her mother's rage at the doorway. In desperation, Bartok grabbed a carving knife to intimidate her. During their struggle, her mother's cigarette dropped, and she called the hospital, claiming Bartok was suicidal. At 16, Bartok supported herself while her mother was hospitalized, working two jobs to maintain their apartment. Her mother's return, trembling and medicated, crystallized the permanence of her illness, forever spinning in some dangerous orbit. The mental health system's failures, exacerbated by Kennedy-era reforms that shortened hospital stays without providing community support, trapped them in an endless cycle of crisis and temporary recovery. This pattern left both sisters hypervigilant, carrying deep psychological wounds into adulthood. "In my memory palace," Bartok reflects, "I'm forever a dolphin in blue, sleepless waves, swimming toward a distant, fathomless light." By 1990, Bartok and her sister returned to Cleveland to confront their mother about guardianship. They found her barefoot in the snow, mentally deteriorated. The encounter turned violent when her mother attacked Bartok with a broken bottle. During the struggle over a childhood drawing, Bartok fainted. She managed to grab photographs before fleeing as her mother chased them through the snow. Both sisters changed their names afterward and ceased direct contact for 17 years. Though Bartok maintained sporadic correspondence through letters, her mother's responses grew increasingly incoherent. While Bartok pursued opportunities abroad, studying in Italy, working in Israel, and earning a Fulbright in Norway, her mother became homeless, drifting between park benches, airports, and shelters. This wrenching choice between self-preservation and filial duty forms the memoir's ethical center. Watching Buddhist monks create a sand mandala, Bartok grapples with the question, How can I help her without endangering myself? In 1999, Bartok suffered a traumatic brain injury after slipping on black ice, creating an unexpected parallel with her mother. Both now struggled with unreliable memory. "The neuroscience of memory fascinated me," she writes. "How our recollections physically change our brain's neural connections each time we recall them." To preserve her memories, Bartok employed the ancient memory palace technique. Each room became a repository for memories of her mother, a gold-walled chamber with a glowing passion flower, a vast space where white dolphins leap through memories of better days, and a room containing a white dove and a porcelain doll's head. At the Brain Trauma Center, once simple cognitive tests became overwhelming challenges. She found meaning in the Kala Chakra Sand Mandala, a Buddhist art form created over days only to be destroyed, symbolizing the impermanence of memory itself. In 2006, after 17 years apart, Bartok and her sister reunited at their dying mother's Cleveland Hospital bedside. Though nearly blind and severely emaciated, their mother recognized Bartok, but believed her younger daughter was dead. Their mother's backpack held cigarettes, a diary, sketchbook, and 17 keys in a sock. Her storage unit revealed peculiar treasures: a butcher knife, 1950s Geiger counter, hair for wig making, and notebooks ranging from geometry to fairy tales. Most poignantly, they found Bartok's carefully preserved letters from their years apart, alongside her childhood pony with its mended leg, evidence their mother had held them in her thoughts despite their estrangement. Women from the shelter visited regularly, showing unexpected tenderness toward Miss Norma. They saw wisdom in her that Bartok had missed, with one resident, Lucille, crediting her as inspiration for escaping abuse. 7 months after her mother's death, Bartok visited the Field Museum's Ancient Egypt exhibit, where a scroll's negative confession included, "I never abandoned my family in times of need." This reminded her of her mother's memorial, where shelter residents spoke of Miss Norma and her whispering life. In her studio, Bartok created a wonderkammer with items from her mother's collection: her bag of hair, teeth, a broken plastic pony, an owl book, and a photograph in a red flowered dress. She kept her mother's ashes, planning an Italianate urn with painted birds. With her sister, they would scatter them across the shelters, motels, bus stations, and places where she slept for 17 years. Through remembrance, Bartok transformed these fragments into something meaningful, weaving suffering into a narrative of connection and resilience. She dreamed of a memory palace where she could live with her mother, somewhere in that place between sleep and morning, lit by stars and winter moon. The memoir's power lies in its unflinching honesty. Bartok neither minimizes her mother's illness nor demonizes her, instead capturing the complexity of loving someone both vulnerable and dangerous. Through vivid detail, she transforms difficult experiences into unexpected beauty, incorporating them into a larger mosaic of meaning.